Hey guys, what's up and welcome back to your favorite podcast, The Breakthrough Podcast Show. Today I'm very excited because for the first time we have a hip-hop DJ on the podcast. Representing Gully Gang India, we have DJ Proof all the way from Bombay. Welcome to the show, bro.
Hey man, what's up?
I'm so glad you're doing this because I'm really looking forward to your journey, man. Because, you know, hip-hop right now is booming, man. You guys are at the right place at the right time. And, you know, what a great way to start our podcast with someone representing hip-hop, with you, man. I mean, you're literally slamming it. So tell me, bro, how's it going? How's life?
First of all, thank you so much for a lovely introduction. Right now, pretty much okay because of the lockdown, but trying to work out some things because not been doing gigs.
I know, man. But I've seen your gigs, man. I mean, before lockdown, you guys were like literally slamming it. I think you guys were playing in Prism in Hyderabad and all across the country. You guys were literally slamming it, man. So I'm pretty sure things are going to get better and things are obviously improving right now. But I'm pretty sure things are going to improve. So anyways, let's start from the starting, man. How did DJ Proof happen? How did you eventually get into DJing? How did you make this a career? And how do you eventually doing what you're doing right now?
I always loved DJing way back when I was in school, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. So the first time I heard hip-hop was way back in 2001, 2000. I don't remember which year, but it was Eminem and it was...
Yeah, I mean like Eminem, everyone had that major phase. I mean, in terms of listening to music.
Correct. Everyone who started hip-hop at that point of time is got through MTV in India. Mm-hmm. And through Eminem.
Yeah, of course.
So when everybody was listening to Backstreet Boys in school, I was listening to Eminem and a lot of other people. I really didn't know what exactly hip-hop was before, but I loved it. DJing, I was always fascinated because I seen a couple of DJs come to my school for, you know, Children's Day and everything, these kind of Christmas party. They used to play. So I was always fascinated by that. Plus, when I saw first time Linkin Park and Limp Bizkit videos, I saw, you know, Mr. Han.
Of course,
DJ of Linkin Park and Lethal Weapon of Limp Bizkit. I was like, what are they doing? What are they doing? So I was always fascinated about it. I never saw it as an opportunity to... you know, as a profession. But after my 12th, I started working right away after my 12th, during my vacation itself, I started working to make money, you know.
Okay.
So during that point of time, I started going out, started to know a lot of, you know, things happening in Bombay, like clubbing and all, by 18, 19. So I came across a lot of hip-hop DJs, especially DJ Sa that I came across.
Okay.
You know, I was a fan. A big fan. I'm still a fan, but I was a big fan back then. And I got in touch through Facebook and everything. I went to his lot of gigs. Not him, a lot of other hip-hop DJs, like Money was there.
Of course.
Bob was there. So I was in the circuit, like, you know, people of hip-hop. A lot of hip-hop gigs used to happen and those pure hip-hop gigs. Mm-hmm. Pure.
Yeah.
So in 2010, I decided, like, you know, I always loved it. You know, why don't I give a shot? So I enrolled... Sa and I became good friends through that. And he said he did it through Nasha, DJ Nasha.
Yeah,
an institute in Andheri West. So I said, let's go and do it. I was still working. And I was working like an American shift at that point.
Okay,
so
you were working like in a call center, like in a BPO, right?
A BPO, you know, because I was just out of 12th standard. So, you know, so what I did is I used to work from like midnight till 9 in the morning. I went over there, Nasha, and I said, this is my work hours, I can't change. But if you give me like a later batch, like 3-4, I can't do it because I have to sleep and go back to work. So what, you know, at that institute, what they did, they made a special batch for me at 11 o'clock. They never did it for anyone, but they said, okay, let's go ahead and do it because I see you're very passionate about it. And so I used to go from work, from, to Andheri on my bike. Somehow reach, you know, still awake. Sometimes the instructor, you know, who used to stay by, I used to go and wake him up because it was pretty early for him too, because they were instructor plus they also used to play in the night.
Okay.
So I used to literally wake him up, open the place. We used to do like 1.5 hour, 2 hours, 1 o'clock, I'm back home, go to sleep, back again, get up in the night. So that went out for like 6 months.
Okay.
In a period of 6 months. So that's how I got into the DJing. I learned professionally. Then when I finished everything, I started doing a couple of gigs. First gig I got through was through DJ Sa for a opening store party. He said, bro, I wanted to come and play opening set. I'm doing a main set, but I wanted to come and do an opening. So it was a big opportunity for me because I just cleared my course and I was like, wow. So I was not even expecting any money at that point of time.
Yeah.
But that guy actually gave from his fees a small amount of money, but still he gave me.
That's phenomenal, man. I mean, like, big ups to him, man. Yeah, that's amazing.
So I'm like, wow, I was blown away. So that was the first gig that I ever did. And that's how I got into DJing.
So basically at that age, I mean, everyone's keen on learning how to DJ, you know, people love music, they love hip hop at that time. I mean, so I know many people who actually done a course that time, you know, a DJ course and, you know, just did it as a hobby, didn't really have a career out of it. But for you, was it like a hobby or was it something that you're going to think, you know, let me make this a career, you know, let me make this as my full time career? Was that an option?
Not at right away, because I seen a lot of struggles. So I said, let's work and let's DJ at the side. Like mm-hmm. if I get a gig in the weekend, during a weekend when I'm not working, let's do that. Let's make a side hustle money.
Okay.
Not professionally. But what happened is EDM culture came in at that yeah. point of time, 2011. yeah, and a lot of hip-hop gigs were fading away. Like only few hip-hop DJs were playing and they were at the top tier DJs and hardly any new DJs were getting booked.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, wow, I don't think there's a future for me. And so what I did, I still said, let's keep on working, finish my study, whatever. And I want to do it. But right now I don't see a opportunity, you know, where I can do it full time because first I have to support my family because my at that point of time, just like, 2011, my dad retired.
Mm-hmm.
So I like, I really cannot do this full time. So
what's your dad's background? I mean, what is he doing? What's the family background that you guys have?
So we are not from a well-to family. It was like a normal job, like a office job that used to work.
Okay.
So first of all, he was abroad like half of my life overseas. And then mm-hmm. he came back and he started working. And he said like, he's also been working from 17, 18. So he decided like, now my son is already working. Let's quit the job and I want to retire. So I said, go ahead and do it. I'll be happy to take care of my family and that shit. So eventually that point of time, I said, no, I cannot do this full time because... Mm-hmm. My dad is dependent. That's the reason he said, because he's been working for like, what, I don't know, 35, 40 years. He's mm-hmm. been working all his life. And I like, it's time for you to retire and, you know, chill. Let me take over it. So then that thing happened. Then suddenly EDM thing happened. I said, it's not happening. So I said, let's keep on work that I have. I have a steady income. If mm-hmm. I want to do this on the side and I make some money out of it, well and good. Then suddenly 2014-15, a lot of hip hop gigs started happening again.
Yeah, man, because back then I think everyone was into kind of EDM music. And I remember for us as well, we started off as electro house DJs and then went into mm-hmm. deep house and then went into, you know, house music. And a lot of things happened in between. I think that's when the whole phase happened. But I think in Bombay, Bombay was one of the only cities where there was still a small hip hop scene happening. You know, there was Vivian Divine, Mumbai's Finest, all of these guys were, you know, kind of doing their whole hip hop scene. I also actually know a lot of people who back then were, you know, in the scene, doing rapping and stuff like that. But, you know, for us in Pune, like it was mostly like a rock city. So I just feel that, you know, just cause you're from Bombay, you kind of had that, you know, that vision that, you know, okay, you know, let me get into hip hop. But, you know, that's something which is very, very pivotal in your career because like you said, like back then, everyone was like into like, you know, EDM and stuff like that. Was it like a proper decision? That you know, let me stick to hip hop, or you know, was a thought across because there was no such concept of like a hip hop DJ back then. Of course, a couple of DJs were playing all across the country, but there was no real concept of like a hip hop DJ because everyone was like doing everything.
That's
like you,
correct.
Yeah, you're like mostly like a commercial DJ. You're playing R&B hits and all of that stuff. So yeah, man. So was it like a conscious decision that you know, let me just stick to hip hop?
First of all, I fell in love hip hop music way when I was a teenager. So I got stuck with it. I said, this is what I love. This is different. This is different with anyone. I'm not going to diss about EDM or anything. I've been to the first Swedish House Mafia first gig in Bombay. Like most of my friends, like Sa, me and everyone, we listened to everything. Even at that point of time when EDM was coming up, at that point of time, trap was coming up too. Trap style.
Yeah,
so because it was a part of an element of hip hop, we, you know, started incorporating a lot of trap music into a set way back then in 2012-13. I was not doing a lot of gigs, but I started, you know, downloading stuff and putting, if you go to my old SoundCloud, Mixcloud, old sets that I used to put up,
okay,
I have like a dedicated episodes for trap at that point of time, 2013-2014. So that's how we still got, you know, kept ourselves into the hip hop music with trap being a subgenre of it.
Okay.
But we always love hip hop, man. We, especially me, I always love hip hop. I never saw as a money making thing. Oh, because I want to make money, let's move to EDM right now because that's what is popping up. I never saw it because it was my love and passion that I wanted to do. I said I will stick to it no matter what because this is what I love. Because if I go ahead and play something which I don't like, people will know it. You know, you also as an artist, if you play something which you don't like, it shows on your face. It shows on your set, this guy doesn't like that shit.
Yeah, man.
That's why, you know, that's how I got stuck to it because I loved it. And around 2014, when I think first time, I think Mere Gali Mein came out.
Yeah.
It blew up everything. So everybody started focusing. There were hip hop gigs were happening at that point of time also before Mere Gali Mein also. But nobody, you will see the same faces that you go to all of the hip hop nights. Those same faces will be there. For example, Yogesh used to come. He used to manage Clayton at that point of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Clayton and we played a couple of gigs at Level 5. So there was one of this place who used to do hip hop on a Wednesday night, Level 5, every week.
Okay.
Thursday, we used to go to Ibar where Ishani and Bob used to play. You know, that was also like a every hip hop party go thing to go to these kind of nights. Then SARS Uncensored Night was there, where once in a month, everybody of hip hop who loves hip hop will be there at Blue Frog Bombay, because that's what it was back then. Because those were the purest, like people who loved hip hop will go to these kind of gigs because they know they will get these kind of hip hop music there.
Of course. I mean, I think one factor that people don't know about hip hop is hip hop is not like just a genre. It's a culture in itself, you know, which includes DJs, rappers, you know, beatboxers, you know, all of these things come part of the hip hop culture. Back in India, you know, tell us about how did the whole Indian hip hop movement start? Because I'm pretty sure you were around in the scene where they were having all these online battle cyphers. And, you know, when, you know, Nazy hadn't popped up, Divine hadn't popped up, you know, it was just in a very, very nascent stage. So, you know, I'm from Pune. I don't know the inside. So tell me, if you were around in the scene, you know, what was happening? How did it actually happen? Because there was no Gully Boy back then. There was no Zoya Akhtar helping you guys out. And there was nothing like that happening. There's no Ranveer Singh backing you guys up. So tell me, how did it eventually start? You know, where did hip hop actually come from? How did the hip hop scene start in India, man?
I would say this started way back before like 2007-8. There were a lot of like people were there were doing online battles on Orkut. So if you see, if you check with these rappers, you know, they will let you know more inside about that. But there were online battles where they used to write their battles on a Orkut page, and then someone has to go ahead and reply to it with another battle. You know, so it was like all about the pen game, how who can write it better. And, you know, that was way back then in 2007-2008. Then, of course, Mumbai Finest and a lot of other rappers were making music for that community who were following at that point of time. Like from Bombay, it was Mumbai's Finest. Then Brother V was there. You know, a lot of people who were part of it. There were people who were throwing underground battles. I may not have been there, a lot of them, but all those rappers, like they will decide a place and blast a text message to someone and everybody will be there and they will do it with no proper sound, nothing, just on this Bluetooth speaker or whatever they have, and they would do these kind of battles back then. And still there are a lot of good battles, you know, if you see, I can't remember the name of the channel, there are a lot of hip-hop battles that kept happening till now. And those are the same guys way back they were doing, you know, in 2009, 2010. So those guys are still dedicated to throwing freestyle battles and they're still there. I'm going to send you a couple of links and you can see how these guys are doing. They're proper videos, you know, proper videos. And the fun that you get with the, you know, the punchline and the comeback with this, oh my God, you'll be amazed. Like, wow, these kind of talents are there in India, but it's not known by a lot of people till now also.
Great, man. Now hip hop is actually blown out to another proportion. I mean, you are at the right place at the right time. You know, India is the hub of hip-hop right now in the world, you could say, and you're at the right place at the right time. You're actually affiliated with the boys, you're with Gully Gang, you've been associated with them for a while now. Tell us, how did it happen, and tell me, how has life changed after getting signed to Gully Gang, man?
So I knew Divine, JD and everyone way back then, as I said, because it was a small community. Everybody knows each other at the club. You will say hi and all. But when they started coming up, like especially Divine and everyone, the whole Gully Gang movement came up. We were there to support them by playing the song. That's what a DJ can do. So we kept on doing that. So apparently what happened is I started this night called Boombox Wednesdays at Rasta.
Yeah, we know about Boombox, man. Don't worry. It spreads across India. Don't worry. We know about it.
So what happened is, again, people got a place where they can come and party and enjoy the hip-hop kind of music. So what I do is I keep it fresh, whether it be old school, new school. I make sure that, you know, it keep on have a lot of rotation. I don't want to play the same thing again and again. It's a weekly thing. So I kept on doing that and people started loving it because I was playing. I was not only catering to the people who love 2000 music, 90s music, but also people, new kids who love current music. So I used to, in that 2-3 hours of night, people used to have fun. Plus, I used to do not only DJ sets, line up rappers. We have done a lot of you know, hosted rappers do their sets. Plus we done a couple of even an album launch for Encore. Yeah, so when I started doing Boombox Wednesdays way back in like 3 years back, we just completed 3 years in May. So apparently what happened is I used to play a lot of old school and new school together. Plus I used to play a lot of Indian hip hop in my sets.
Okay.
So people love the fact that I'm catering not only to the people who love 2000 music and they don't, you know, doesn't get to listen in the club. So I used to play that. Plus also the new kids who want to listen the latest stuff. So that's how Vivian and the boys used to come out and hang. because they know this is the scene. Plus, we also hosted a lot of rappers, beatboxers. So we also did an album launch for Encore's album that came out. So people not only from the underground hip-hop knew about this, but people from people who were not into hip-hop came to know this is happening. And you get to know that these kind of people are there every Wednesday. It's not just Vivian. It's going to be Rajakumari, Encore, any of the hip-hop named D-Evil are there at least once or twice a month, and they come and enjoy. So I think Vivian saw this and he saw that what I'm doing. So he asked me out like, bro, are you signed with anyone? I said, no, bro, I'm doing it for the last 7-8 years on my own, managing myself. He said, this is what I'm going to do is the Gully Gang Entertainment. And I'm going to sign you whenever I do this. And this is at least 9 months before everything, you know, came up. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that had happened is he did Gully Fest. He came to me and he said, bro, I want you to do a set before me at Gully Fest. And I was like, wow, is this really happening? So I did that. And I was like, I think he loved that too. And he said, bro, whenever I do it, I'm going to sign it. So 8-9 months passed and, you know, I didn't even ask him what was the update and all. But then I think when he announced before in Jan last year and Feb or March, I think I got a call from Chaitanya, his business partner, and he said, bro, I think Vivian already spoke to you and we want you to sign as you as an artist. So I went there, you spoke about a couple of hours and discussed everything, and we signed the contract in a couple of days, and that's how I became a part of Gully Gang, and they officially manage me right now.
So tell me, what are the changes after getting signed to Gully Gang? Because I'm pretty sure they were like, you know, it was a new venture for them as well. So tell me, how did life change for you as an artist? How did things change after getting signed to them?
Even though Gully Gang was like a new thing, but Chaitanya being he has the good experience with OML, and he used to work with another management company. I don't remember which one. Mm-hmm. So he had a good experience and he was already managing Divine and before Gully Gang. So that front, I know they were professional. They know everything about it. So my gigs got much more better. So there were quality gigs. You can understand because plus they are like upfront money and then do the gig. So this is what I love. So I know my because all my year, like 7-8 years when I was signed, I've ran behind people for money, and I've lost money because of that, because I have done gig and I haven't received a lot of,
that's the story of every artist. I think every artist has gone through this. That's the only common point that we all artists have.
I think
these guys put things into perspective. They put things into structure. They got everything aligned for you, and you know, you didn't have to worry.
I don't have to worry. Yeah. All I have to do is go play my gig, do your thing, and everything from the back end will be taken care by them. I was like, awesome, so man. Happy. Like, I don't have to worry about flights, stay, where I'm going, what I'm going to eat. Everything was taken care by them because that's what the job is and that's what they're best at. So yeah, that's what I experienced after signing to a management, because I wasn't managed by anyone before. So that's the big thing that I loved working with them. Plus I get to tour with Divine a lot of gigs. Even JD, the main official DJ of Gully Gang, sometimes I used to be, because there are huge gigs where JD has to be in front with Divine, and like, of course, he cannot be behind the console. So I got, for example, I got to play Soul DXP. Soul DXP is, I always wanted to visit. I always wanted to go because it's about music. Plus, it's also about sneakers and streetwear. And I'm into both of the things.
You're in the big buff.
Yeah. So, and my first ever time that I'm going, I'm playing on the main stage because of Divine. So it's like a lot of dreams were coming true. I never saw myself playing at that stage. I always wanted to visit it, but I end up playing. I met a lot of other people, and I like Stretch Armstrong. Have you heard about DJ called Stretch Armstrong?
No, he's
a New York City. He's big. If you see all the 90s and 80s hip hop, he's the one who used to break a lot of records. So I met Coffee. Coffee is a reggae artist from Jamaica.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, and I'm like, wow. So this is what my journey has been right now. So I'm just experiencing. It's just early right now. It's just been a year. So, and after year, this pandemic happened. So let's see, after everything gets normalized, what else is in store right now.
Great, man. Since you mentioned Divine, I'm actually a huge fan of Divine. I actually had a chance to meet him and, you know, actually you know, attend one of his gigs when he was in Pune. I think that was before before Farak released. But I have phenomenal respect for the artist. You know, we don't do the same kind of music, but I just really love him as an artist and I respect what he does. He's also got this you know, very Gully Gang sabse hard parivar wala vibe, you know, where he's helping his friends and, you know, he's helping everyone kind of, you know, grow together. So since since you've been around him so often, you know, tell me, how is the vibe? You know, what's the scene? What do you guys do usually?
So this is why he started, first of all, Gully Gang, because he said, like, he saw how he was treated by labels and music labels, how they end up getting bad deals or whatever the deals, not bad deals or whatever. Yeah, most of them are bad deals. Even Kanye West tweeted last night, you know, how the deals are bad. So how, you know, so that's what he conceptualized, saying, why don't I go ahead and start a label where I give an opportunity to these young boys, which I didn't get way back then, and make sure at the end of the day, it will take hip hop more further what it is right now. So that's how, that's what is the goal is. And I think it's not just the music. They're going to focusing on videos, because if you see all the videos compared to what they used to do before, because right now they have the, what do you call it, resources, and they are making super dope ass videos. So that's how I think that's his goal is, after talking to him a couple of times. And that's what I think the future, to see hip hop as big as, not as big as, but at the same level as Bollywood, and everybody makes money, not just him, everybody.
Yeah, I think that's something which I really, really like about him, and I really respect about him, you know, that he's actually helping his friends, you know, from back in the day, you know, to get into, you know, get into the whole scene, and, you know, and earn money together, you know, which is something which is really, really cool. One more thing, man, I mean, I want to talk about the whole disc culture that's come into India. You know, I think, I know it's very 2017-18, but I just kind of get this off my chest. So dissing has been always been a culture in hip hop, I think, you know, but I think in India, people have taken it to like another level. Divine ne kuch bola, tweet kiya, to MEV, you know, has his fans go crazy. Same with MEV's fans, they goes crazy when Divine says something, you know, Raftar aur uska planning tha. So aise kuch, is there any planning that these guys do? I mean, tell us the inside juice, man, because you know all these guys. But I just feel like that our Indian audience is taken to another, you know, they've blown it out of proportion. Because I think the whole diss culture started off, the whole trend started off, I think, with Machine Gun Kelly and Eminem, you know, dissing out. I think before that, there was Drake and there was Pusha T who were doing, you know, they were dissing at each other. They were dissing each other. I follow a lot of, you know, disses. Ja Rule, Eminem, 50 Cent, The Game. All of these disses are something which I've always followed, and I thoroughly enjoy them. But I feel in India, people have taken it to another level, and if you just go and read some YouTube comments, you'll go crazy, man. So tell us the inside story, tell us what really goes on, you know, what are the conversations that you guys have when you hear a bar that's against one of your friends. So tell us the real scene, bro. What are your two cents on this?
As you said, dissing was always been a part of hip-hop culture, and it's gonna be there in future also. So there were a lot of disses before 2017 also, but only the underground community used to know that the diss has already happened, you know. Okay. But because YouTube and everything, it came out and everybody knew. First of all, I want to say, nothing is planned. Nothing is planned. Okay. It's someone wants to say something. Everybody thinks, and they should think, that they are the best in the game. And if they want to go ahead and say it in a track, or they want to say it in an interview, and some other people get offended, then, you know, if, and they're going to come back with a diss, you know, it's up to them. But what happened is, our Indian people love masala.
Yeah, man.
Anything, whether it be a movie, whether it be music, or whether it be news, you can see the current scenario. So what happened is, when all the disses started coming out, people were enjoying it. Ki haan, kuch drama mil gaya hamein. And that's how the fans were divided. Ki no, this is the best. This is the best. And we need disses, because at the end of the day, when the diss tracks keeps on coming, because they put more effort.
Yeah.
Compared to that, I mean, they put effort in the tracks when they make a, you know, a song. But this is, they go all out.
Yeah,
they like, they have to. Middle finger and like everything. So they go all out. So we need that, because the best bars will come out when you're dissing someone. Because you're going to hit below the belt or whatever, but the punches will come out. So I think you need disses. But again, the people need to understand, it's a diss. Enjoy it, finish it. But don't take it personally. Go ahead and do shit or comment or, you know, fight over it. Because at the end of the day, they're going to make the bag. Whoever is dissing XYZ, like, they are going to end up making money any which ways. So y'all just come and enjoy if it's happening. But don't take it personally, that I would say. Like, I'm talking about the fans. Because fans go crazy. You never know what they will do.
You guys have any funny stories of, like, you know, fans going crazy? Since you guys are like touring so often, and, you know, you guys all together, you guys have had any, you know, crazy experiences where people are going crazy and, you know, acting really weird, since all of you guys are like all together at the same place? Tell us if there's some funny stories that you can share with us, man.
Every time you go out with Divine, it's going to be crazy, man. Like, after the gig, before the gig we enter, it's going to be people banging on the door, Divine bye. So that is something new for me. I know he's been doing it for a few years, But for me, when I used to go, like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah, man, because all of you guys are like in the same room. It's like you, Divine, this MC Altaf, Rajakumari, you know, all of you guys are all chilling together. I'm pretty sure it'll be really surreal to see all these kids going crazy, man, just going crazy behind you guys. But tell me one thing, man, you've been actually touring the entire country. Tell us the feeling of, you know, being, like you mentioned earlier, being a DJ who chases his payments and worry about his payments, to eventually now being a superstar DJ, traveling the entire country with a fun lot of people. Tell me, how's the touring life? Because I myself have never traveled the entire country, you know, performing music and doing my music. But for you, it's been a huge drastic change. So tell me, how does it feel to be a touring DJ? And tell us a bit about the experience of touring across the country, man.
I haven't reached that position yet, but I'm on my way right now. So still not the star DJ, but I'm working on it. I have a vision and I know where it is. So right now I'm not, but I'm going to be there. Touring is hectic. It's damn hectic, man. Like, everybody see, you know, like people who are not touring, like for an outsider, they say, oh my God, he's having fun, this, that, that. But we are on a tight schedule. Like, you finish this, you go early to a venue, do a sound check. First of all, you got an early morning flight or whatever, wake up. Bombay, whatever time is going to take you an hour to reach to the airport, that is a struggle. Plus, it's early morning flight. Once you land, you don't go directly to the hotel, go take a nap. You go to the venue, sound check. And when you reach there, half of the thing is not ready most of the time. So you got to wait there and you're already dozing off. By the time everything sound check is done, we go have lunch. You take a nap, and by the time you take a nap and get up, you have to get ready and all and go again all the way because, hello, traffic. Traffic hai bhai. So 2 ghanta aur pehle niklo set ke pehle to reach the venue. To reach the venue, then quickly set up and then get ready. And once you are done, pack up everything and head back to the hotel because there's another city that's waiting tomorrow. So yeah, but we have fun. Like, if the gig goes, like, most of the gigs are good, but some of the gigs, the energy is way fucking high. Like, we go, okay, let's go party. We do party, like, in the hotel room, like, till morning. We don't sleep, and we directly go sleep in the flight. So, yeah, it's fun, but it's damn hectic. If you are not ready for this life, I would say, please.
Bro, I asked you about touring, and in the last 1.5 minutes, you mentioned sleep, nap, tired, sleep, nap, tired. I mean, a little birdie told me that, you know, Proof can literally sleep anywhere, you know. You give him he can sleep like a fucking log. You give him any place, as long as it's there, he can just sleep.
Anywhere. That's what. Because the problem is, like, most of the time I work night shifts and, you know, it became habit of sleeping anywhere. Like, I used to go to finish my shift. I go to Sa's house because it was like 5 minutes away. He's talking, and I'm passed out on the couch. In the car, if he's... ask, and even Yogesh has been there with me in the car. 5 minutes, I'll be like, put my head down and I'm off. I can sleep anywhere, to be honest. But during the tour and all, you hardly get to sleep. Because flight, is being either people are pushing you or like, you know, these kind of things. You hardly get to sleep any which way. So whatever time you get to sleep, just take a quick nap and be ready, man.
So I've actually made a deal with DJ Sa. So once this episode comes out, he's going to leak, and we're going to leak all your pictures of you sleeping in the car, on the floor, everywhere. And, you know, in fact, this is just going to be the artwork for the podcast episode. So all your fans and all your friends are going to get a lot of good pictures.
So you're trying to end my career.
Yeah.
Yesterday we were talking to each other and we were saying we know each other for 11 years, bro. And so imagine for 11 years, how many pictures he have. And that guy, even if he changes the phone, I don't know how, he still have pictures from 2011 and 12 where people were using fucking BlackBerry. So I don't know how.
You guys are like really tight, right? I mean, you guys have this amazing bond. If you just go to Sa's Instagram, you'll see pictures of himself, his family, and DJ Proof. You also previously mentioned that, you know, he's mentored you and, you know, he's helped you in this DJing career. Tell us about this friendship. Tell us about this bond. Tell us, how did he get to, you know, what you guys are right now?
Yeah, man. So I always gonna give him props till the end because, to be honest, as an artist or as a person today, I have learned a lot from him. Because when I started DJing, all I used to do, I used to just go with him, tag along, whether it be Bombay or Pune. Pune, every gig I have been there. Bombay, every gig I have been there. I've just stood next to him and I've seen him, what he used to do. I've just been around him when he talks to people and I see how he's so fucking humble. And that's, I think, that's where I got it. And I realized that you cannot show ego or you cannot be rude or it doesn't take you far. If you're going to be humble, if you're going to be, you know, the person the way you are, it's going to take you very far. So that's what I learned from him. I've seen him. I know his family, like how, like whatever hardship that he had, and he still makes sure that whatever gigs he go and gives 100%, man, hats off to him. So that's what I've learned about him. So I told you the start of this conversation, I was a big fan, but eventually that turned into a friendship, then like a brotherhood, and we are like tight forever.
Man, definitely is one of the finest hip-hop DJs in India, man, and he's killing it. And DJ Sai, if you listen to this, big ups to you, man. Much respect and much love, and hopefully he should be on the podcast soon.
Of course, man. So it's gonna be much way fun than compared to me when it comes to talking and all.
Yeah, so probably next time when I'm in Goa, he's in Pune, if you know, we're all meeting in Bombay, we could definitely do another episode with you and him together.
Yeah, so apparently I was also his I was the best man at the wedding. So imagine from being a fan being a best man at a wedding of this guy. So imagine how the journey has been.
Great, man. That's really, really awesome, man. So tell me one thing, bro. You know, apart from being very, very active on your streaming and on your gaming and all of that stuff, you're also like a sneakerhead. You have like, I mean, every picture you see of yours on Instagram, there's like a new sneaker. It's a very, very expensive kind of a hobby to have. So tell us about that, man. Tell me about your whole sneaker collection.
I've always been into sneakers as the same way as hip hop, because hip hop is a culture, you know.
Yeah.
It's gonna be related to everything. So before I couldn't, because I didn't have money. But as soon as I saw that I could, after sustaining my family and everything, I can still do this, I started kind of investing into sneakers. I would say investing, not buying, because the sneakers have a lot of value, you know, even of the resale. But it depends what kind of sneakers that you buy. Yeah. So I love sneakers. So I end up buying a lot of sneakers at least once or twice a month before the pandemic. But after pandemic, I haven't bought a single sneaker till now. So yeah, I have around 30 to 35 sneakers as of now.
Oh my god. So what's your like finest pair?
My finest pair, I would say Jordans. I just bought a Jordan 11 at Soul DXB. So one of the Jordan 11 bread, that is one of the, I would say, I haven't even worn it till now because I didn't get an opportunity till now. So that is one of them, because I also have a Easy, not a, one Easy, but a few Easy, but Easy 350, which is the fluorescent one. That is one of them. And the 700, those are my favorites. But you will see a lot of me most of the time wearing Nikes, Air Maxes, because I love Air Max 90, bro. So I love it.
You're also like twinning sneakers with Ranveer Singh. I mean, that's really difficult to share the same clothes or footwear that Ranveer Singh is wearing. How did that actually happen?
Yeah, so that was Gully Fest. That was Gully Fest. So like,
was it planned?
Wish I knew him that way. So apparently that sneaker that I wore was released a week back. In it was an Adidas Pharrell NMD Human Race collection, and it was like a like an African tribute collection by Pharrell. So that came out like a week back, and I bought that one. And luckily, he was wearing the, because he's a part of Adidas team, so he gets every sneaker, and he ended up wearing the same sneaker. So I was like, wow! And that's the first time I met him personally, like properly, because of Gully Fest, and that was also because of Divine and the Gully Gang. So he was there for the whole night. He was there in the backstage talking to everyone. He's a different guy, man. He's a different guy.
So bro, tell me, what was like your family reaction? Because you started off working in a BPO, kind of working like a normal regular guy, getting into DJing, and then now you're actually chilling and hanging out with people like Ranveer Singh and all these big stars. What is your reaction in terms of, you know, your career? Because I think the money is flown in, you're wearing expensive sneakers, and you know, what's their reaction with your career? Are they happy? Are they happy with your career?
I would say they're still, I mean, they're happy, but they're still skeptical about it, like thinking how long this will go on. But again, Indian parents, if you know, they want like a steady job, steady income and all, but they're coming around it and think, you know, giving me my space and all, okay, this is what you want to do and you will be happy in this. So let's not keep you poking about get a job and all. And so they have coming around, but I would say not 100%. They're still happy about it, or not happy. I wouldn't say they're happy, but they still are skeptical about it. I would say still 10%. They are like, I think you should, in the head, but they're not telling me that you should go to work. But in the head, I know they're still saying, I think you should get a steady job and all.
Great, man. I think you mentioned earlier that you have a vision. If you could just let me know what your vision is, what's your plan, what's your agenda? Is it money? Is it playing a bigger, you know, probably a stadium? Is it probably doing more international gigs? Is it probably reaching more audience? What's DJ Proof's vision? What's your plan?
See, my vision is it's not to be super famous or something. I want to be happy what I'm doing, and I want to make money out of it. That's one of the vision. But I want to be like, I don't have to worry about money when I'm doing something. So right now, yes, I am worried about how my next paycheck is going to come because of the pandemic and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of my other visions is, I would say, it's not just going to be DJing that I want to be focused. I want to move on to other stuff into it. Even I'm doing a podcast. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm going to do the first episode with Saha, apparently.
Nice.
I'm going to shoot it. So that is one of the things. I think content is the next big thing. And I want to focus a couple of things over there, whether it be video or whether it be podcast or whatever. So that is a thing. And also I want to end someday maybe, you know, having my own company where I can help a lot of other people, not just DJs or maybe other producers or any artists. It's my way of giving back where I got an opportunity. My way of helping out. So yeah, there are a lot of things in my head, but yeah, these are the few visions that I have. Of course, I want to play a lot of international gigs, maybe work with a couple of international artists. Those are the top things. Those are there on the vision board. But things that I do want to do right now, these are the things where I can achieve it easily. That's what I think.
Wow, man. I hope all of those things actually happen as soon as they can. Big ups to you for actually thinking that way. Not many people think that way. But if you have that vision, wishing you all the luck. And, you know, I just hope that thing happens as per your requirement, as per what your wish is, man.
Of course, because I got help wherever it's possible. Most of the time, anybody who comes and asks me and help, I would always like to give it back because that person will remember it and it will pass on to someone else. So that's, everybody should do it. Helps you grow as a community and everything.
That's great, man. So hip hop in India actually is at its peak. You know, you guys have achieved like 10x of what you guys were looking out for. You guys have got the movies, you guys have international acclaim, you guys have mass appeal coming to India, you have artists traveling all across the world. Everything's working in your favor. But what do you feel is the next step for the Indian hip-hop scene? Because like I've said, you guys have done all the major things and you guys have actually overachieved on what you guys were looking out for. What's the next step for Indian
artists? I think you said that yes, we did achieve, but I would say we have just crashed the surface. We have a lot of long journey, I would say, we have right now, because not everybody is still listening to hip hop. There's only few people. I mean, I would say like not few people. There are a lot of people, but they just listen to it because they want to. People like rock culture.
Mm-hmm.
People go die hard, crazy, and all. So we need people like community like that to grow. There is a community like that, but we want more people to get involved into. So where any label. We don't have to worry about big labels to put in the money where maybe just when like Gully Gang, Kalamkar or Azadi just puts out, it just not reaches the hip hop community, but it reaches the masses as well. And we don't have to depend upon Bollywood to reach there, I would say. When it happens through our own artists instead of actors or XYZ, I think hip hop will make it in India.
Of course, man. We're actually coming to almost the end of the podcast. So before we go, what are the advice you'd give to a lot of the rappers who actually are looking out to be the next Divine, the next Nazy? What advice would you give to them? Okay. And secondly, what advice would you give to DJs who want to specifically become hip hop DJs, probably turntablists and people spinning only hip hop music? What are the advice would you give to them?
So for the rappers, I would say everybody who starts is going to be whack at the first. Me as a DJ also, I was a whack DJ before. I'm still learning it and I'm still trying to, get better. So any rappers who think they're making it, keep on working on it, because right now you might be inspired by someone, but if you keep on doing your stuff, keep on recording, keep on releasing, even if it's a bad thing, keep on releasing, at least you will know what is working, what is not, and you will get your own sound, and then people will automatically realize that who you are. Don't worry about the labels. There are a lot of ways you can work with the producers. If you Karan Kanchan and me, I have my own Discord server. Karan Kanchan has his own Discord server. You can just hop onto it. There are a lot of collabs happening with producers and rappers. So there are a lot of ways, and you can just put it out, and you don't need like a big label to push out your song at the current generation. You know that. And you put it on YouTube, you put it through, to DistroKid, to Spotify, Apple, it will reach if your product is good. But to reach there, you need to work hard. Keep putting it out more music. Do you know the story of Russ, what he did?
Yeah, of course. I know Russ.
What he did, he put out every week a song on the SoundCloud till he made it. And I think he did it for like 3 years. Every week a song. So imagine if you keep on doing that, and it will end up reaching at a point, it will fall. Someone from any of the labels on of A&R will end up coming through and they might end up signing you. But you need to keep on doing it. You if you give up at one point of time, oh, nobody's, my views are not growing, nobody's listening to me, and you end up doing it, then you are to be blamed. Because there are people are listening a lot of music on, like, for example, from our team itself, like Betherby, Divine, Altaf, they are listening to new people, new kids on the blog. They might not tell you right away, but because they are keeping an eye on you, what you can do next. So keep on doing that. And if they love it, I'm sure, because I've seen Divine actually going out and signing people like Avruthi. He's been listening Avruthi for a long time. Avruthi's been doing a lot of stuff on their own before. And that's how he came out to Avruthi, the lot of producers, you know, who also signed to Gully Gang right now through this way, because that's how people are watching you, man. You may not know, but people are watching you. So keep on doing it, what you're doing. DJs, I would say, do not be monotonous. Keep on switching up your style. Every set or every gig, do not play the same music, I would say. If you keep on do the same thing again and again, you will get bored and it will reflect on your set. So keep on trying new kind of music. If it's work, it works. If something doesn't work, you know that it doesn't work and you will not make that mistake. Mistakes are, I would say, mistakes makes you much better. I would say, I think you would agree to
or wrong. Of course, man.
Because a lot of times I've played some stuff and it's not worked. So I know this won't work here. So don't play that again. Being a DJ, you know, you can switch the music and change the mood anytime. So keep on practicing, first of all. If you just came out of a academy, just learned DJing, do not expect someone to give you a main set right away. Opening sets are much, much more important and much more better than the main set, I would say. Because opening set, it shows you how talented you are. If you can get a bunch of people standing at the side of the bar to the dance floor, main set is a piece of cake for you, I would say.
I can actually imagine, because we play like house music, so, you know, our scene is slightly easier. But for hip-hop, I mean, it'll be really difficult, you know, playing banger after banger, but still not getting people up on the dance floor. I'm pretty sure it's going to be much more difficult to kind of do an opening set, especially if you're playing like for a big hip-hop artist.
Because I played opening set for like 7 to 8 years at the start of my career, like from 2010 11 12 15 16. I've been playing only opening set because there were other big DJs, so I know opening sets are much more important. And people, like, I've seen these new kids coming up, they get an opportunity, but they come up playing the same like bangers after bangers, and there's no one in the crowd, and people end up leaving because they are not ready for that kind of stuff at 10 o'clock or 9:30 or even 11 o'clock. They are not ready for it at that point of time to hear bangers. So let them get into the mood and set the mood properly, serve everything and give it to the main set DJ and they will take it over. But people need to realize opening set is way important, as important, I would say, as main set.
Yeah, man, I think this is something which we should actually, you know, share with all our friends. I have a lot of friends who have their own DJ academies and, you know, their own DJs. I think this should definitely be one of the chapters, you know, where people
it are teaching. It has to be in the, like, if like, they're yeah, teaching all syllabus. Those stuff, this has to be one of the lectures everywhere, course, by default.
This is something which really will actually, I mean, it's a good idea that we got from the podcast, and I really hope this actually happens in most of the DJ schools. DJ Proof, it's been an awesome time actually having a chat with you. Thank you so much for coming on the Breakthrough Podcast. It was so much of fun. We've actually never chilled before, but just through this podcast, I got to learn so much about you and so much about the hip-hop scene in India. And again, I would say thank you so much for being on the podcast and looking forward to, you know, seeing you achieve much more bigger things in life and looking forward to actually slamming it, man. I mean, wait for the COVID scenario to get over. I'm pretty sure you're going to be all across the country touring and traveling. So big ups to you, man.
Thank you so much for inviting me. First of all, I would like to let you know that I'm a fucking introvert. I don't like to talk a lot. So I don't know how I spoke to you for an hour. So I'm surprised on myself. So
that's what we do on the Breakthrough Podcast, man. We actually, that's the point of the podcast.
Yeah.
But again, thank you, bro. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Looking forward to catching up with you, bro.
Thank you so much for inviting me and I hope to see you soon.
Cheers, bro. Cheers. And that was the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning into the Breakthrough Podcast. I'm getting mad love from all of you guys from the fraternity. Continue sharing, but definitely consider subscribing, following, liking, doing all that good stuff. This definitely helps me a lot.